Do you have anything to hand up, or are you just going to speak to what you've lodged?
I'm just going to speak to what I've lodged, if that's okay.
That's fine.
And the hospital, he said, obviously, there was, yeah, both submissions will just speak to those. There's different documents there.
Yes.
Okay, I'm Bridget Parker, and I'm very happy to be here. First of all, as a resident of Wanaka, but also as the owner, operator of Archway Motel. Lived in Wanaka in Queenstown area for 12 years. I'm here for the submission and the verbal deputation in terms of the proposed district plan stage 2 change in terms of the visitor accommodation variations. So first of all, I would like to say that I'm representing myself and presenting my genuine belief and perspective, which may or may not have any effect on trade competition, and it's certainly not my intention to put that my competitive advantage before my bigger perspective. In terms of the proposed changes, I support the changes permitting property owners residing or living in their homes, but in lower density residential areas, to short-term homestay or host 5 people or less all year round without restrictions. I also support changes to permit houses, homes and now apartments in low density residential areas to be absent, unhosted and let their properties to short-term paying guests, but only support that up to 28 days per year and only on 3 separate lets or occasions with a no minimum stay requirement. In terms of restricting or not permitting or non-compliant homestay properties to let or host or any stay for more than 5 guests, we support your changes on that. Or for the absent property owners of homes, flats and apartments in especially low density residential zones, that they don't step across that threshold of 28 days. Also supporting the restriction of discretionary activity requiring resource consent for those properties exceeding these threshold requirements, but only in high density residential zones and visitor accommodation subzones. Okay, I do have a few questions that I would like to raise on the homestay categorisation, because even though permitting 5 guests per night but no actual restriction about how long they stay, we are a little concerned of this. We pose in the sense the blanket permission to allow this activity without complying with certain fire, health and safety and building compliance requirements. So I'd like to make that noted. And I also believe that whether they stay, if they're hosting 20 nights a year or 365 days a year, this still has an impact on the residential communities and on the environment, the services, the infrastructure and our neighbourhoods. And originally, I believe this concept was termed a farm stay, a unique New Zealand farm stay experience, and was an accepted concept as a low impact activity in terms of the parking, in terms of impact, and in terms of motives such as earning income, etc. I believe the whole concept of farm stays, bed and breakfast has changed significantly in the last 10, 15 years. And I believe that instead of remaining in a farm or a low impact area, it's moved into neighbourhoods, into city centres, town centres across our region, which provides quite a lot to think about in terms of challenges and in terms of equity and fairness, in terms of what you call commercial short-term letters. The impact of neighbourhoods in terms of extra vehicles and movements and strangers changing next door every day has an impact on the quality of the community connections and the relationships within that community. So we should also consider that contribution of homestay property contributes to the tourism and environmentally. Restrictions or higher rates may be a consideration to put some destination management controls in place. I support your new restrictions for the same reasons proposed for absentee property owners, houses, homes, flats and apartments in the low density residential areas, restricted to a total of 28 days. I support the non-compliant resource count also for the short-term stays outside those thresholds.
Ms. Parker?
Yes?
I don't want to, how can I put this? I don't want to take anything away from your submission, but we've read the submission you've lodged. Mm-hmm. There's no point in reading it out to us again. Mm-hmm. If you could highlight the important
mm-hmm.
bit.
Sure.
The reason we allow 10 minutes is so we can you can highlight those bits and we can then ask you questions. If you read it all out, that's going to take us 15 minutes.
Yeah, that's fair point. No, that's fine. My main threshold in terms of priorities is the fairness and the managing the non-commercial accommodation so that we do plan together as an industry, as a community, as a council, to manage this huge growth in, it's not just Airbnb, it's a lot of private houses, apartments, because it's that experience. Not only, I'm not talking about just the visitor experience, I'm talking about the residential neighbourhood experience. And we ask that you consider commercial rates appropriate to those levels of activities, which you've already suggested, that you apply those. I know it's difficult for some of those Airbnb properties, but there are ways to register, monitor, and require that these properties have compliance, health and safety, etc., and they would have to register with the council, and you could monitor from then on the level of activity and what properties and how many. It's the growth of this non-commercial accommodation that worries us the most. Residential effect, the visitor experience effect, and the contribution that they're not making to rates and not making to the infrastructure as well. And we want to work with you on these issues. I don't think there's any simple solution. The flow-on effects, as we know, are more properties are rented out short-term instead of for seasonal workers and worker accommodation or even people coming to live in Wanaka. So we think this is a major issue that we'd like to work with you on. And I think by managing and controlling those Airbnbs, Booker Batch apartments, so that they are treated as commercial businesses, I think that will help stem some of this uncontrolled potential growth that we've got and make it fair. And we're getting accommodation businesses opposed to some of these changes and not to others. But even the businesses in the town are saying they can't get workers, they can't attract people, mechanics, chefs, teachers, because they can't find suitable accommodation because they're being let out. Instead of for seven, you know, $2,000 a month, these properties are now let out short-term to our international domestic markets for up to $4,000 to $6,000 on average a month. So you can see the motivation here. I just would like to think that we could work further on these areas and try to make a difference together. I don't want to say people shouldn't stay in these Airbnbs. I welcome it. But I feel we should take a much more strategic look at the quality of our communities and balance with sustainable tourism. Okay.
Now, is Hospitality New Zealand going to tell us different?
Slightly different tangents. And later, yes, absolutely. So I'm the spokesperson on behalf of our Central Otago branch of Hospitality New Zealand, and I'm the accommodation sector chair. So I'd just like to outline just the main points of the submission and acknowledge that you've read it, that we submitted on the 23rd of February, and just to focus on the areas in particular that we really support your changes in definition and categories of visitor accommodation to those three categories, homestays, visitor residential accommodation, and then commercial hotels, motels, etc. We also think that home stays and bed and breakfast style accommodation, where the host stays in the house with paying guests, we support that. The residential visitor accommodation, that's when part of the house or the entire house or an outside guest house is used by paying guests. We appreciate that that's a separate category now, including apartments. And then visitor accommodation, the commercial hotels, lodges, etc. We're supportive of working together with the council on developing practical and effective solutions and how we can fairly and accurately take into account all these different rental activities and types of visitor accommodation in our region that are short-term paying guests. We're supportive of working together. We propose that in terms of defining that, we support the categories, we support your low, medium and high density zones, but we believe commercial rating differentials could be applied to all three categories, not just the traditional commercial options. Our other main points of concern, which have been brought up over time, are the duty of care that isn't always provided in some of these hosted activities, not the hosts, but the Airbnb houses, bachelor's apartments. So in terms of assisting guests, in terms of educating them, potentially warning them, and providing that wonderful guest experience, to give the best experience, we are concerned that they're absent on many occasions, that they haven't even got the minimum health and safety requirements or the appropriate building design compliance codes. And we would like you to consider that we're happy to work with you on this. Can we apply this to all the categories and not just to commercial hotels, motels and lodges? And we see this timing of it as an opportunity to develop council guidelines and compliance to all of them. Because if we don't, I see a disruption, all hospitality accommodation members see there will be a disruption and a potential deterioration to the fabric of our community and our neighbourhood's well-being, and increased complaints of noise, traffic movements, extra visitors coming and going nightly. Is anecdotally, people have had enough. The longer-term reputational damage to our destination for visitors, not only just visitors, but our residents, as explained. So Hospitality New Zealand supports and applauds you, the council, that you've taken with regard to the accessible, affordable housing stock and the thriving community neighbourhood. However, we don't believe your proposed district plan changes alone will solve our problems of freeing up that shorter term, medium to longer rental accommodation for workers and residents coming. So we've mentioned the flow-on effects for our workers and shortage, but above all, it's the scale and growth of managed homes, batches, Airbnb properties that's about 4,100 in 2017, and it's growing exponentially. So that equates to 10,452 commercial stay nights, which is 40% of the size of the commercial accommodation stay nights. And this has changed already from 2017. So we are concerned for safety, and we're concerned about the unregulated, unmonitored and potentially unsafe experience for guests and those around them in the town, and about the experience of our residential neighbourhoods. We require a level playing field. It's urgently required as the gap widens in terms of the visitor options. So the commercial accommodation have more and more costs applied, and the non-regulated, non-commercial accommodation, the gap's growing. Prices are growing exponentially this way, and the profitability and undermining of commercial accommodation is increasing. We still believe that these non-commercial property short-term letters should become commercial to pay commercial rates. We urge the council to apply across those categories, and we would like the council acknowledge that we appreciate the steps you've made to manage and register the issues we have in terms of growth and tourism. And we also appreciate working together in the future, but we would like to have the opportunity to have highlighted all the flow-on impacts to our community. And we look forward to working with you further on these issues. Thank you.
Tell me what your role with Hospitality New Zealand involves.
That's a good question. Yes, when the Motel Association became disbanded, and basically Hospitality New Zealand picked up the role of incorporating a lot of the accommodation providers, commercial accommodation providers in New Zealand, they developed a sub area of accommodation sector. So most of Hospitality New Zealand is hospitality, cafe, bars, etc. But now we have an accommodation added in. So my role is for our branch, which is Central Otago, which is not totally the Pew LBC district, but most of it. My role is to help communicate with our members who are in accommodation, bring any issues and positive things to the table, go to meetings and get brief and talk about anything that needs urgent discussion or an opportunity to work with you on more challenging strategic things like this.
So do you have have you got a structure where you would have communicated with the members that are affected by the Queensland planning provisions?
Absolutely.
And then heard from them and then jointly put this submission in that you were speaking to today?
Yes. Hospitality New Zealand has communicated for some time on these issues and encouraged people to get involved, encouraged them to make submissions and to be involved in the discussions. So we have monthly or six weekly meetings, and as I say, we bring up these issues of any concern, get feedback, collect and collate the consensus of how people are feeling and looking at all the different points of view. And without doubt, we have support of all our members that I have spoken to, and Shark will probably back me up on that. In our area, there are deep concerns about the level playing field and about the deterioration and effects of tourism on our communities. So first and foremost.
In the first part of your presentation, although you were clearly speaking for yourself as well, you didn't tend to say we or our concerns. And when you say that, you're meaning the group of members of the accommodation subgroup of Hospitality New Zealand that are in this Queensland Lakes area.
Well, the first submission, I started saying but actually my husband and I, because we own the business together, we as a team.
Okay.
Thank you.
But that's fine. Thank you very much. Now, you've talked about some of the impacts that you see this growth of short-term accommodation and residential properties. And, of course, people are telling us the opposite to what you. And so we're trying to work our way through the pros and cons. With the effects on the neighbourhood, such as noise or parking or just general disruption, have you got examples you can give us? Because what we're being told is that, well, actually, long-term rental people can make noise and have parties, or people that are here even in their own holiday homes for short periods, they're on holiday mode and can be quite active and noisy. How can you tell us that persuades us that actually it's more of a problem with short-term accommodation?
I can say that from anecdotal evidence from a number of people, including people who, for example, I see every month who come from Dunedin or outside here, and they said they used to talk about how much money you could make from the share market, but now they're sick of going out, and people who own properties in Central Otago, Queenstown and Wanaka, skiting about how much money they're making from their letting out their houses. That's their new form of investment, and income. I would say in terms of noise, I have friends that, because I'm on the Lake Wanaka Tourism Board, they say actually tourism, we're over it, we're sick of it, and there's so many visitors, there's so many tourists, and they're not just here, they're in our street. And yes, seasonal workers in longer term rentals can make noises and can have parties. But you would have seen the article even in the Queenstown paper, Wanaka Sun, The Mountain Scene, about complaints of noise in Frankton that actually related more to Airbnb property, which was interesting. But I myself, if I was bringing up small children and the school was half a kilometre away, people coming and going who can't even drive on the correct side of the road, who don't speak English, who come and knock on your door every second day because they can't find the property on Google Maps. I mean, this is the sort of intrusion and annoyance and disturbance into our everyday lives of temporary people that are there, different people every day. You can't build connections and relationships with them. I know when they're empty, you can't build a relationship with an empty house either, but they're not disturbing you. But when there's a lot of Airbnbs, a lot of traffic movements, I believe there is an impact on the quality of your lifestyle.
That was going to be another one of my questions, is that, I mean, the district's always had a very high percentage of holiday homes that have been, and possibly many of them still are, empty for a big proportion of the time. I mean, my house is like that. So, I mean, in terms of this residential cohesion, neighbourliness that you talk about, hasn't that always been a problem in the district, that that a street will be a mix of properties, some holiday, some long-term, and the holiday houses will have people coming and going who may be not so interested in getting to know their neighbours, even if they have owned the house for years?
So I agree with the principle of what you're saying. The thing I argue about is the extent and escalation of this growth. I mean, we had a holiday house in Wanaka when we, 20 years ago, you had to get resource consent to let it out. So we would lend it out to friends, for example. And then later on, when you could do it as a restricted activity for a little while, but then the people next door would complain, the people upstairs were doing different shifts, and on it goes. I mean, it can happen in normal life, but it's the scale of this change that when you look at the growth, for example, I won't say the name of the company, but the people that provide commercial sheets, we have a really good relationship, we have a lot of feedback and work together on how to make the service better, etc. And they have confided in me on more than two or three occasions that 90% of the growth in their sheet renting business is to Airbnbs and private houses in Wanaka and Queenstown and Central Otago, to the point they cannot take on any new business. It's unprecedented growth. And that's anecdotal, and it's concerning. And when you look at the compliance costs, health and safety, operating costs of those properties compared to our compliance costs and our overheads and commercial rates, the gap's widening. We would like it. The council would have more revenue. It would be a fairer playing field. I just ask for us to make it fair, make our neighbourhoods neighbourhoods, because Wanaka's famous for being connected and engaged with each other. And I'm starting to see a lot of antagonism coming out. I think a lot of the people that tell you something different have an ulterior motive because they've got a bed and breakfast themselves. A lot of councillors have bed and breakfasts and make $100,000 a year. I mean, no one's going to be completely right or wrong, and we are all sitting in a different position. We just ask that we take a bigger picture look, drill down more, and really try and work out something that generates more money for the council, that's directly related to commercial short-term letting volumes, and make some sort of differential rate or contribution from some of these places to at least make them contribute something back. If some of them don't want to do it anymore because of that, and because they have to be compliant and have some sort of health and safety or building code, that's their choice. But I would just like, my favourite priority is sustainable tourism, sustainable and environments and communities. I can see in the future there's a major problem here. I don't want it to escalate out of control because of people's private motives for making money.
I just have one last question, just a very quick question. One of the propositions that was put to us is some form of registration so that the properties that are being used for homestay or host-absent residential accommodation can be identified and the things like health and safety or those sorts of requirements identified and enforced. Do you think that should apply, that sort of registration of that ilk should apply to all homestay, no matter what scale they're at, and all residential visitor accommodation?
I can see on principle they should be, but because they're hosted, you assume by a responsible person who does the best and provides a wonderful experience. But because they are hosting up to 5 people and they can do it unlimited all year round, I would like to feel that they have the same rules applied, whether they're there or not there.
Yeah.
Some of them still have an accident, some of them go on fire. I mean, the duty of care side of things is obviously lessened in that situation, but it's a good point, but I still would like to see the compliance, health and safety applied to make it fair for all, under the new categorisation, all 3 categories.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Now, that's all the questions from me. Thank you. But some of the others might have questions.
I've just listened to your comments on the evidence. I presume you've read the officer's report. She's recommended that the restriction on the number of beds for 3 be dropped and the number of days people can stay be increased to 42. Do you have any comment on that?
Yes. I was hoping that you might bring that up. Because I wonder why, when the consultation process hasn't even finished, that indeed the recommendations have changed before actually listening to everyone. I was just interested in how it moved from 28 days to 42. I can see the principle of it. It was 90 days and then 28 days. But we are talking about new operators. We're not talking about existing ones. So we have to be mindful that the 600 that registered before it was an amnesty period, that's a huge number of properties to register, knowing that perhaps if they don't within that time frame, they may have to adhere to these new considerations. So obviously it is a significant change, and what worries me is that the individual commercial operators or any other commercial operators in our region, our voice, we're only so many people, we can only speak once and put a submission in. But I'm a little bit concerned about the scale of 1,500 Airbnb properties or the company that's powerful that may be putting some influence there and there's a bit of pressure. But I'm really just wanting to outline the whole picture and say that I appreciate the position. I understand, I love people to stay where they'd like to stay, but I'd like it to be fair and safe and equitable.
So you're not supporting that project?
No.
No, good things. That was very helpful.
Thank you, Ms. Parker.
Thank you.
My questions too. Well, Ms. Payne.
Now, my name's Loris King, and I've lived in Wanaka for 60 years, and I've always been taking a particular interest in resource management issues, particularly as they relate to the public land and reserves. I'm a founding member of the Friends of Pembroke Park and have regularly made submissions in relation to management plan and resource management matters. I have the following concerns about the proposed plan change. It ignores the significance of the Reserves Act and the importance of the management plans. Indeed, there is a tendency for the council to play lip service, of any service at all, to the obligation to have management plans for reserves. It purports to have the management of reserves in the RMA arena, when clearly any reserve must be managed in accordance with the Reserves Act. It adds unnecessary complexity to the management of reserves and the ability of the members of the public to participate in the process. Although the Reserves Act clearly contemplates that the RMA will have some application, any district plan provision should follow the structure, including terminology, of the Reserves Management Act to enable people to find their way around and, more importantly, to avoid any conflict and confusion arising out of the use of different terminology. It has become increasingly difficult for people such as me to participate in the processes such as this. The initial document produced for Chapter 38, Open Space and Recreation, for this round of hearings is over 1,000 pages, with all areas of the council, including in just one document, and I have found it very difficult to find my way around the document. Not everybody is adept at online documentation. I have found the sheer bulk of the documentation online, the different classifications, zones and subzones, as well as the interrelation between the RMA and the Reserves Act, confusing. And I also question whether this whole process is necessary and simply overcomplicates the administration of reserves and creates further potential for conflict. The perceived purpose in the fact sheet, the opening statement on it, that the fact sheet said, the new zones will apply to parks and reserves and other such community halls, service, civic spaces, golf courses, cemeteries that are council owned or managed. Currently, these areas are managed using designations and underlying zoning, usually the rural and low density residential zone. The designation process works well for large-scale projects, but not for the smaller projects, such as new parks furniture, toilet blocks, or general maintenance. The designation process is also not available to external parties or commercial operators wishing to locate their activities in parks and reserves, meaning that they are usually required to get resource consent based on the underlying zoning rules. The proposal is to introduce a better way to manage the parks and reserves and activities that are expected to locate within them. It is my submission that the dominant document for the management of reserve land is the Reserves Act, Reserves Act 1977. Section 3 of the Reserve Act specifically states that the Act shall be administered for the purpose of providing for the preservation and management for the benefit and enjoyment of the public areas of New Zealand possessing recreation use or potential, whether active or passive, wildlife, indigenous flora or fauna, environmental and landscape amenity or interest, natural, scenic, historic, cultural, archaeology, geological, scientific, educational, community and other features and values. The Reserve Act defines the various categories and requires that reserve land be classified to ensure that the control, management, development, use, maintenance and preservation of reserves for their appropriate purpose. Section 17 specifically states that having regard to the general purpose of recreation reserve, every recreation reserve shall be so administered under the appropriate provisions of the Reserve Act, and similar provisions appear for other reserves. Although most of the reserve land is owned by the council, it is owned in trust for the specific purpose set out in the Reserves Act. council is required to have, by law, to have a management plan for any reserve under its control, management or administration. And the management plan shall provide for and ensure the use, enjoyment, maintenance, protection and preservation as the case may require, and to the extent that the administering body's resources permit, the development as appropriate of the reserve for the purpose for which it is classified. The management plan must also incorporate and ensure compliance with the various principles set out in the Act as they relate to the individual classifications. Section 53, Recreation Reserve, confers comprehensive powers on the administering body in the exercise of its function, and I'm attaching a copy of section 53 and 54. I find the references to the different zones and the other appellations to be confusing, particularly when the Reserve Act clearly provides statutory classifications and the activities that may be permitted within each classification. A proposed paragraph 38.8.2.9 and the document says, notwithstanding the following rules, the Reserve Act applies to land vested under Section 14 of the Reserves Act 1977 and reserves land controlled by Council or the Department of Conservation may be subject to further controls under the Reserves Act 1977 or through reserve management plans. Discussions should be held with these agencies as to the existence and nature of these controls. All reserves to which the Reserve Act 1977 apply, and I expect this would be most of all the reserves within the district, exist because of the provisions of the Reserves Act 1977 and must be managed and administered under that Act. It is mandatory to have a management plan. The whole process, purpose of the management plan is to provide for how Council will control, manage and administer the reserve. Paragraphs 38.8.2.9 refers to the Act as a bit of an afterthought, whereas in fact it is effectively the founding document for the reserve. It is wrong to shift the management of reserves to the district plan, particularly given the statutory mandate that reserves are to be managed under the Reserves Act. I believe the Council is downsizing the importance of management plans. November 2003 management plan for Lismore Park, which is a significant park in Wanaka, 18.5 hectares. It was a significant booklet, and this is it here, beautifully set out, all of that for Lismore Park. But unfortunately, I find where I am, I'm sorry.
5.3.
Council's vision for Lismore Park is now encapsulated in an 11-page, three of the pages are actually photographs, as this is it now, 11 pages, but it's not just for Lismore Park. It is also for Kelly's Flat, Allenby Park, Forks Terrace, Domini Park, and Kennedy Crescent. I find it hard to feel that that 2003 management plan is like this, and now we've been relegated to that. In conclusion, it is inappropriate to talk about managing reserves through resource management, the Resource Management Act. There is a statute, Reserves Act 1977, which is especially designed to cover reserves, including their control, management and administration. The Reserves Act should be the primary document and should not be mentioned in the district plan as an afterthought. Whether buildings are permitted should be viewed in the context of the nature of the reserve and the purpose of the building rather than having regard to the generalised zoning. The environmental effects of the building must be considered, particularly in the case of sensitive reserves, but the council must make it clear that buildings are not permitted as of right.
Commissioner Dixon, do you have any
questions? No, I think that's a question.
Commissioner Forsyth, do you have any questions?
No, I take from what you've said, Mrs. King, that you would prefer previous process whereby the reserves were designated and under the in the district plan rather than zoned in the district plan, and that the designation was for reserves purposes or something like that, which then brought it back to the Reserves Act.
It's never changed. The Reserves Act has been the founding document for reserves.
So are you familiar with the way the district plan previously provided for reserves, the last district plan, or the one that's cooperative actually?
I've been involved with it all along, but it doesn't change. This is a statutory requirement. The Reserves Act is the act that you must abide by.
So no matter what provisions are in the district plan, you're very keen to make it clear that the Reserves Act is still a primary document and that all must be complied with.
Of course it is. It doesn't alter. It's never altered. It's there for the purpose of reserves.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much.
That's fantastic. Another well-informed and well-put-together submission, Loris. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Ella Hartman. I'm Airbnb host and a resource management planner. I hold a Bachelor of Commerce in International Business from the University of Otago, in Dunedin, and a postgraduate diploma in arts planning from this university. I am an associate member of the New Zealand Planning Institute, and I've worked as a planner in Wanaka since 2007. Please note that this submission should not be taken as planning evidence. The proposed visitor accommodation provisions seek to establish an appropriate regulatory response to increased short-termity of residential dwellings or units to visitors primarily through the use of online rental platforms. This response is clearly needed, however, the provisions proposed are not consistent with the number of nights a dwelling could be let short-term by remaining a primary residence or with the average length of visitor stays. I believe that the number of nights and number of lets should be increased such that they are consistent with short-term let opportunities and average night stay, and that in doing so, the district's residential housing supply and affordability will not be adversely affected. Maximum number of nights. The proposed provisions limit short-term letting of residential dwellings or units as visitor accommodation to 28 nights a year. I believe that based on average annual leave and public holidays over the busiest summer and school holiday periods, that the total nights proposed does not provide enough flexibility for residential homeowners to rent their dwellings short-term. Based on the statutory annual leave of 28 working days plus weekends, 10 public holidays plus weekends, and one anniversary day for each region, the total number of nights that a primary residence could be let short-term by the owner while that owner remains in full-time employment within the district is 45 nights. Examples of short-term let opportunities for residential dwellings and units are as follows. 2 to 3 weeks over Christmas New Year, 1 to 2 weeks over Easter, 1 to 2 weeks over the July school holidays, 1 to 2 weeks over the October school holidays, 3 to 4 nights over Labour weekend, 3 to 4 nights over Queen's birthday, and that also includes the 12 weeks of annual school holidays. Based on the above rental opportunities, annual leave, public holidays and weekends, I believe that a maximum of 42 nights, which equates to 6 weeks, would be more appropriate maximum number of nights and would provide more flexibility for residential dwellings and unit owners, while flexibility in this way, in my opinion, makes an important contribution to affordability by allowing residents to supplement their income. Number of lets. The proposed provisions limit the number of lets to 3. However, this number is not consistent with the average night stay in the district. As noted in the Infometrics report measuring the scale and scope of Airbnb in the Queenstown Lakes District, dated October 2017, the average visitor night stay in the district is 4.1 to 4.2 nights. That's in page 16 of the appendix. Therefore, based on the proposed maximum of 3 lets per year, a homeowner wishing to short-term let their dwelling or unit would only be able to manage on average 12 nights per year, which is well under the proposed maximum number of permitted nights. I do not believe there should be a limit on the number of lets, provided that the maximum number of visitor accommodation nights are not exceeded. However, if there must be a limit on the number of lets, I believe that the number of lets permitted should be consistent with the average night stay in the district. Therefore, I believe, based on an average of four night stay, as noted in the Infometrics report, that the number of lets should be at least as follows: 28 nights, a maximum of 7 lets, and for 42 nights, 11 lets. Parking. To avoid adverse effects on visitor accommodation relating to parking, I believe that parking for short-term letting should be restricted to on-site parking only. This should include all registered vehicles, including trailers, boats, jet skis, etc., campervans, and caravans. Conclusion. In conclusion, I believe that the number of nights should be increased to 42, in line with the realistic opportunities that a primary residence could be let, and that there should be no maximum number of lets over that period. If council insists on a maximum, then this should be consistent with the average night stay being 4 nights. The resulting maximum lets would therefore be 11 nights over 42 nights.
Can I just ask you a question about the annual leave? I maybe update that for just 4 weeks.
Which is, yes.
Well, 4 weeks is only 20 working days, not 28.
Ah,
yes,
not including the weekends. Yes, correct.
I have been as up to date with it as I could, but yes, I'm aware of
the first. So the office report has recommended to us,
yes,
removing the 3 lets per annum and increasing the number of days to the number of nights to, I can't remember whether it's 42 or 45, I've got confused now, but in that ilk.
Yes.
So do you support,
yes,
that approach?
Yes, I do.
Just so that we understand your situation a bit more, do you when you say you're an Airbnb host, is that as a homestay host or when you're not there, both?
I have homestay, and then when we are on holiday, we rent out our house.
Yes, so you would fall under either of the categories.
Both.
How often? I'm not trying to pin you down here, but how much of the year are you homestay hosting, for example?
At the moment, 2 to 3 nights a week. Over the busier times, so December through, well, we're not usually here in December, but so January, February, March, it can be every night.
Yeah, and in the very busiest time when you might take annual leave, then you try and you leave the house and
we do,
and try,
yeah,
and hope and try,
yeah,
and
because
as
we go,
much as possible.
Because we're going away anyway, it's not, we don't leave, so we can, the house isn't being used, so.
Yeah, so when the house is not being used, you try and,
yeah,
fill it up with non-host resident accommodation.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. And what sort of neighbourhood do you live in?
in Kiramoko Park, so low to medium density.
And have you had to get a, I mean, I'm not, this is not a trick question, but have you had to get a resource consent at any stage?
No.
No, so
no.
You've kept under the
yes,
current
Yes, we've kept under the thresholds, but we have registered for as a homestay.
Okay, look, and what sort of market are you aimed at?
Price range, or we're not that high.
Not that high, no.
We've got a small house.
So not the exclusive luxury.
No, far from it, yeah. We are, we don't quite have backpackers.
No.
We're a bit higher than that, and then, but people generally come for one or two nights for the homestay, and then we generally have over winter, if people are staying in the whole house, it has to be people that know how to use a Kiwi house, so know how to use heat the house using the fire, because otherwise it'd get cold. And the same over winter, summer holidays, we generally rent out to two or three times to various different people, really, Kiwis, and then people from outside New Zealand.
Just one last question. So that I can understand how this works. When you're not here, like you might be on holiday or overseas or whatever, and your house has been let out,
yeah.
How would any noise problem, say,
yeah.
be dealt with?
I think
how
that would
you
be,
cover that?
Well, there's a couple of different ways. From an Airbnb point of view, that's where I don't know any of the other ways. I would definitely rely on my neighbours to let me know if there was an issue, which... not for myself, but for another property that has happened in the past. And in that case, there are very, as Airbnb, you can provide really strict rules about not making too much noise, where people should park, how they should behave when they're on your property. And if they break any of those rules, you can ask them to leave and that they can be removed. So it's really quite strict in that. And then from a district planning point of view, if there are people breaking the noise limits, then the normal procedures would be followed. So, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, just one. Commented here in paragraph 1.3 about the regulatory approach the council is adopting here, or proposing to adopt, I should say. You're saying this response is clearly needed, however, the provision proposed on. Why do you think some higher response is needed?
I feel that there is a need for more affordable housing in general in the district. And I personally in the Housing Trust, so I have benefited from that, and I've actually been able to live in the district because of that. So, but we're the lucky ones. So yeah, we do feel that. My husband and I feel that. There is an affordability issue, and that's for housing, the cost of housing, and then also for rental. I believe that this is a separate, the flexibility in visitor accommodation, applying a bit more flexibility is quite separate from probably the greater affordability issue.
We haven't heard from Airbnb yet, but my understanding of their submission is that they're saying there should be no restrictions at all.
I am clearly noting that I'm just an Airbnb host. I am aware of some of the things that they say, but I believe there should be some.
I guess my question, following on from that, is why do you think it would be create an affordability issue if Airbnb similar kind of?
For renting, I think it creates an affordability issue if there is absolutely no limit. For example, if somebody has a residential flat or a second home a smaller second home, not one of the bigger homes, if there are instances that I am aware of where they have been taken out of the rental market because somebody has said, well, I can, this anecdotal evidence, but that they have taken it out of the rental market. They can get more on Airbnb. Doing that all year, it takes
Yeah, a couple. Did you, Kieran Wilco, again, not holding you to anything, it's just really trying to understand your position. Did you actually buy in Kieran Wilco with the intent of doing Airbnb as
no,
a way of...
No, it was, it was just through the Housing Trust.
And just a question, the option of doing Airbnb and the 42 nights obviously helps you with the district's affordability issues.
Yes.
And would it be sustainable without that?
It would. Yes, it absolutely would. But probably wouldn't get to enjoy as much of the district as we can by doing it. So.
And just one last question. For the people that stay with you in general, would they generally have used commercial accommodation as part of their stay, or other parts of it, or are they generally?
I don't know. I haven't asked. So yeah.
Cool. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
First off, I haven't brought any other sheets as I meant to provide. Or
well, maybe if you read about them when you finish them, Ms. Marsden will search back and ask us.
Sure, apologies for that. My name is Andy Dallas, been living here 18 years proper. We live locally here. Wish to forward a submission to voice the concerns of the ultimate control that the council to have over our private homes. From our view, QLGC has a chance to prosper in the right direction by leading the way and working with Airbnb and the likes to make a real difference, essentially sharing the load accommodation-wise. QLGC has to consider that the land is now a real premium, building costs are at an all-time high, costs of living here are enormous, and we have a stock of potential bed night operations already available in place without having to tax the system any further. Some say the issue of noise, yet two doors up from us is a barking dog that annoys everybody all day, and the council will do nothing about it. And it seems to be a fairly common occurrence here within Wanaka. We've already paid for building consent and use for our four-bedroom home. Say two people per room, so eight people total.
Mr. Dillis, you don't need to read out the submission you lodged, because we've already read that, but you might want to just summarise it perhaps. Or
I haven't put extra thing. This is a complete, there's bits that overlap.
Right.
Okay. So,
I'm just reading on the screen what you're saying is what's there.
All right, so we can skip the part of that then. So we've built to do accommodation and tours as a package, and looking at doing tourism as part of our income. So we are the people who actually need this to work for sustainable living and so on. Our intent, or part of our intent, is with motorcycle tours, and the clients prefer covered in, locked up spaces for motorcycles. 90% of hotels and motels and the like, they don't provide that. So it's something as an Airbnb we can provide off the shelf without having to do any further resources at all. Entire industries, as you know, have been built up around the Airbnb, so to chop the short-term supply accommodation, it's going to make it very hard. The small industries that have been built up, all the cleaners and so on, and they're the very people living in the district who we need here to service it. If we couldn't put our house into short-term accommodation to suit our tours and things, we simply wouldn't put it into the long-term market either. This is based on the fact that when we're away on a trip, we rented our house long-term to a reasonably well-known person in town, and her son had a moment did around $5,000 worth of damage to her house. This is all being run through a reputable property management company as well. So based on that, we were left holding the baby to the tune of about $600. So essentially, if our house was not being put into the short-term account for rental accommodation, there's no way it's going to get put back into the main accommodation, so it's lost forever anyway. I think council needs to understand that setting the higher benchmarks for tourism and high-end clients is absolutely superior to the French of it, the ship mobiles, that our expert tourism have actually sold our country up pretty badly to, which is a real problem. I think it's time to step up the game, support the industry, and turn into sustainable and useful tourism whereby local and tourists alike, government gain, everybody gains. It's a well-known fact that Queensland Lake District Council is expensive to live in. Giving local people the chance to open their homes to supplement incomes, in our view, is a great thing. Cost aspect was highlighted only 2 weeks ago when it was pointed out that the same fuel in Te Anau is 27 cents per litre cheaper than Wallaka. And I think the only reason that would be is because they think we can afford it. Whereas there are a lot of people here who simply can't afford that, and now the guys in the industry that we need to be here to support the industry. The other thing I was... It caught me a wee bit, a $300,000 fine or 2 years in jail. I don't know if there's another crime in this country that you could actually get such a fine or a prison sentence for something so small. It seems to be quite heavy-handed, to be fair. So we've done a few Airbnb. We're not big on it. We'd like to get more into it. So we're sort of freshies, if you like. But the people that have come and stayed with us, they've gone to restaurants, they've gone to the tourism things, they've spent money here. A whole lot more than what the camper fleet do. Why? Yeah, they're freely camping everywhere. The issue of parking is a well-known fact, and the parking in both Queenstown and Wanaka has become an issue. There was discussion not so long ago about a proposed hotel which had no car parking whatsoever. Nearly as absurd as a $300,000 fine, to be fair. So now dispersing a load around the community with Airbnbs takes cars and traffic away from the town centre, reducing congestion. And yes, there are backstops that need to be put in place to make sure adequate parking is available. The Airbnbs, checking those, it's not rocket science. If people can prove that they've got off-street parking adequate, it makes sense. To finish off, we actually have friends in the hotel industry, or two friends in the hotel industry actually, and both don't have a problem with Airbnb and the concept of it. The whole concept of having homes that are already in place here without having to put in further infrastructure makes common sense. And they've said the amount of bed nights versus beds, it's an overflowing situation now, so they're in support of the Airbnb.
Thank you, Mr. Dallas. Just a quick question. This was a bit similar to what I asked Ms. Hardman.
Yes.
So, and you've prepped some of that already. Thank you. But so you live in a house that you also use for Airbnb or having guests to stay?
We do.
So it's your main residence?
It's our only residence.
Yeah. And homestay the people in terms of that you're normally resident?
Yes.
Or do you do a bit of both, like Ms. Hartman said, sometimes you're there and sometimes you're not?
Over the holiday break, you know, if we could take the opportunity when we quite often go to the West Coast, go to Akamatur, and we go where the people aren't. So we have a house, if we can help with the accommodation and the stresses here over those 30 times, yes, we have done.
Yeah.
But for the majority of the time, it's when my wife Ellen and I are home, and we host the most of that.
Yes. And what sort of neighbourhood do you live in? Just a regular Lodge or?
Yes, very yes. much. You're up on top of Infinity Drive there.
Oh, yes.
Yes. A number of other homes around us are used periodically as well for Airbnb. Yeah.
Yes. And I presume you said you're new and you haven't done a lot of hosting yet.
No.
So have you had to get a resource consent, or are you well under the current regulations? Which
oh, well, it's really under, but
yeah.
You know what I mean? What we want to do is do some travelling and things as well.
So you'd like to...
I mean, we intend to do some travelling and put it into the market for longer term, do the resource consent, and then put it through the likes of Good States who do the property management complete. Yeah.
Do you see that there should be some limit, I'm not saying the number, but a limit on the number of days that any residential house should be able to be let out without the owners living there, before a resource consent is needed? I think...
The resource, I mean, I've done some reading things, and I think it's 180 days currently for resource consent you can apply for. Is that correct?
I think it might be 90.
90,
yes. Yeah.
So much in my ears.
I know, but it's other people, there is 180 floating around there, that is another proposition.
That's where we would like to go with ours, because we intend to be sort of half in, half out.
Yes, all right.
I hate winters now, my wife loves skiing, so we've got sweet.
Oh, well, you're getting around.
You're always going to be the host. So I'd like to go to Brazil for 3 months, and she wants to go to TC. We're going to work it out.
I'm just hoping we'll work it out.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, thank you very much for coming. And some of the
others might have questions. Thank you. This is your experience with long-term rental. From your view, would you see from someone like yourself, say, purchasing a property in this district, that utilising the property for Airbnb, even leaving aside behavioural problems, would be a far more lucrative proposition than utilising the long-term rental?
Not for sure, yes. And that's a big draw card for us too, you know. I mean, we live in an expensive place, we acknowledge that. But certainly the attraction of earning more money out of it. And, you know, I'm not dissing on the snowboard community, but I'm saying Airbnbs tend to be a little bit more responsible. The ones that we've met, a lot more responsible than renting a house out to 8 snowboarders. So it'd be a bit of a no-brainer if you'd come back to us better. You know.
But even in income,
yes. Yep. Well, given the long-term accommodation that we've done while we're away on a holiday and coming back to the damage repayment, we never go back and pull again. Yep. So immediately monitor, if they don't gain an Airbnb, they lose the rental home regardless.
Thank you.
I have no questions, and thank you for not sending me to cancel as P.
I did
read your list from around the country and feel thoroughly depressed now that I'm a third of the price of any other. Maybe I should do...
They're all mayors.
Yeah, I don't care if we are, we'll be mayor. Yeah. No, thank you very much, Sam.
No, I'm not doing Christmas.
Thank you.
Mr. McConnell.
Generally supports the proposed plan and its management effects on the functionality, efficiency and safety of the transport network. The Church Mosey generally supported the visitor accommodation provisions, which will assist in restricting the loss of housing supply for long-term accommodation, the earthwork provisions, the signage provisions, and the open space and recreation zone provisions. Transport Agency also supported transport provisions and encourage a connected network that caters for all modes of transport, pedestrians, cyclists, public transport, active networks, private vehicles and freight, and supported transport provisions that promote a compact urban form and require the consideration of parking, loading, access, on-site delivery and safety. Transport Agency seeks amendment to policy 29.2.2.12, proposed 29.2.2.10 of the section 42A report. The council officer was concerned about the restrictive nature of the Transport Agency's proposed amendment. In light of this, the Transport Agency suggests a further refinement of the policy as follows. Manage the location, number and design of vehicle crossings so that development and intensification does not adversely affect the safety and efficiency of the transport network and its users. The Transport Agency seeks an amendment to Rule 29.5.16 and 29.15.1 to signal this access standard is not appropriate for state highways, and I suggest this will provide clarity to district plan users and is consistent with other rules within the plan which specify state highway requirements. The Transport Agency submitted that the definition of transport infrastructure should be amended to ensure potential land-based structures associated with public road transport are captured within this definition. To clarify the intent, I suggest the additional bullet point recommended by the council officer be further amended to read as follows. Any other land-based structures required for transport activities on land or water in relation to the establishment of roads, cycleways, walkways, rail or any other means. Finally, the Transport Agency also submitted on a transcription error for Rule 31.6.12, which should be amended to read, shall be located at least 200 metres from an official sign or traffic signal in the rural areas.
No, that's quite clear.
Thank you, Mr. Rick. Some of these have been picked up in the 42A report,
yes.
Haven't they?
Yes,
most of them?
Most of them have. My bullet point four regarding the stable access that there was, I suggested bullet point three was a further refinement from the officer's report, and as was bullet point five of my summary of the rules.
Okay, thank you very much. Thanks for that.
All good. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I have two apologies to make, actually. I wasn't told that I had to give you each a copy, so I don't have that. And also, I have a really bad sinus cold, and so I'm not operating on full noise, but I'll make enough. Yeah, so bear with me, please.
In terms of what you're going to read out, at the end, Ms. Marston will make sure a copy of it for us.
Yeah, it's not actually in a format that I can give, but I'm more than happy once I get home to submit it
and
quickly through.
Okay.
Yeah, I can do that, sure. So I'm here today in absolute opposition to the proposed changes to the visitor accommodation rules, 28 days maximum, 3 days, 3 lets maximum. After conversing with a lot of friends who rent holiday homes, I'm here today feeling I represent a large number of those affected homeowners who rent their homes short term, who are very unhappy with the new rules. And typically, unfortunately, some of them have not even made submissions and obviously aren't here to speak today, which is, I guess, what happens in life. But I can tell you there's a lot of very unhappy people. Why is this wrong? These proposed rules have certainly not been well thought through and have not been collaborative with the community either. Hopefully I am summarising much of what is in my submission here. They have not considered the negative consequences and new problems this will create in our community to serve the tourism industry and for people to enjoy holidays. I'm amazed that any council can actually legally enforce this draconian and dictatorial ruling onto ratepayers. I also believe this has been ineffectively communicated to affected ratepayers. I know many people, especially out-of-towners, who miss seeing the public notices. And due to the large number of homeowners personally affected, there should have been a letter sent with rates invoices that was specifically titled Changes to Visitor Accommodation Renting. Instead, it was included in a notice under the jargon titles of District Plan Stage 2 notices, and therefore easily missed by many. On a further note to this, I've found the QLDC website extremely difficult to navigate and find information relating to this topic. To exacerbate this even further, the search button is not very functional either in delivering the information requested. And I haven't completed one of those services request forms, but I've certainly told people at QLDC about my unhappiness. So why is this wrong in such an ill-conceived plan? The QLDC objective to shift short-term rental owners into long-term to solve the workers' accommodation problem will not work. The majority of homeowners who own holiday homes, they want to use their properties several times a year and will not rent long-term. The QLDC objective to prevent noise and traffic to settled residential areas. This is poorly thought out. You might have reports of the odd, regularly noisy place in Queenstown. I challenge you to provide evidence of this around the Wanaka suburbs. And if it does occur, it's just as likely to be caused by homeowners themselves on holiday or long-term tenants. Also, surely traffic movements and parking issues are just as bad with long-term rentals, with 3, 4, 5 tenants per house spread throughout the suburbs. The QLDC objective here is to be fair, seemingly, to the commercial operators, i.e. hotels, motels, backpackers, etc. Have the planners stopped to consider how large the fees already are to short-term rental property owners? It's 25% of the annual rates. So based on an average rates bill for residents, that's around $800 to $1,000 per year, which at 28 days maximum lead, I believe is too high. But at 90 days, I believe is acceptable. The negative impact of this ruling. Short-term properties will remain empty. This will create a lack of supply in peak times where international and domestic visitors compete for the same rentals. In turn, tourists and events potentially could go elsewhere. And so businesses lose out, so less jobs are required, and hey presto, a very negative economic impact on our thriving local economy. Come on guys, let's think about this. This ruling stifles a long tradition of New Zealanders who choose to rent a holiday home when they go on their holidays or attend events. This is our God-given right, it's our culture. 28 days will kill it. This ruling also stifles the dream of Kiwis who have worked their butts off to own a holiday home but need cash flow to make it work. 28 days kills that too. This ruling also stifles the dreams of those who have been lucky enough to inherit a holiday home from parents, but it's critical they get a rental return, if required, to pay the costs of your big rate bills, which are only ever headed skywards in the future. So what should the council do instead? Well, let's look at the bigger picture here. Firstly, leave the rules as they are. 90 days is fair, with no 3-day minimum. Secondly, enforce the current rules for goodness sake. Do a better job of enforcing the 25% rates fee. Thirdly, do a better job of noise enforcement and police those noisy holiday makers and the long-term tenants and those that the holiday homeowners themselves cause. Who says this noise is just an issue with short-term rentals? Instead, QLDC, cut some slack to developers and create incentives to get some apartment-style buildings to solve the workers' accommodation problem. Yes, that time has come in Wanaka and could be achieved without affecting our lakefront vistas and aesthetics, e.g. three parks. Or what about the triangle of land up there where the police station and Lansdowne reside? What about, how many could that possibly house? A lot. Don't let the minority totally wreck it for the majority, which in this instance is that short-term holiday home rentals, one, fills a much-needed demand and provides a diversity of options in the market. Two, they allow the Kiwi tradition to remain as is. And three, they allow international tourists to enjoy the leafy suburbs if they choose. So in conclusion, I appeal to you as the hearing panel and your consultants, please, don't be reckless, don't be short-sighted, and don't create a bigger problem for our thriving community. Lastly, I'm wearing purple today. It's a visionary colour. I think QLDC should be much more visionary in their approach to this issue. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming along. Just the same sort of questions that I've asked some of the others, because it helps us get a picture of what's happening in Wanaka and Queenstown. So do you live permanently in the house that you use for visitor accommodation, or is it a holiday house?
No, I have to declare here that unlike the others that have spoken so far, I live in my own home. I don't currently use it for visitor accommodation. I don't have a holiday home that I rent out. But I have a huge network of friends and associates who do, and I'm here today to seriously speak on their behalf. So no, it doesn't affect me personally, but I want to give voice to all those other people. So I can't give you, so my scenario is, no.
But that's interesting for us to know that you're coming on their behalf.
Is it?
Yes, very. So yeah. You understand the breadth of interest in this.
It is huge interest. And I potentially would look at owning a second holiday home. I wouldn't, if this ruling comes in, I wouldn't do that because I would have it as a short-term rental. And I just question, what's wrong with the 90-day rule? I don't think that the job, I don't think it's being enforced properly, this 90-day rule. If council had, if they enforced the rulings that exist for the 90-day rulings, but I do think the three-day minimum needs to be removed, you know, you could be pulling out $800 to $1,000 per homeowner.
So, do you see that you've supported the existing 90-day rule, minus the three lead per year requirement, which isn't there?
Or no, minus the, sorry, what is it? A minimum of three nights?
Minimum of three nights, sorry, yes, that which is in the existing.
Okay.
I don't support that. But do you see in an area where you may live, a residential area, that it is reasonable to have a limit on the number of days per year that people could rent their house out, including when they were there at all? I mean, or if, as opposed to 365 days a year and just go for it?
Well, frankly, I thought that 90 days was a little bit stingy anyway. And you know, 90 days is only 25% of the year. You know, I think it's fair and workable and reasonable and deals with people who need extra income to live in this expensive town. It deals with helping with the accommodation squeeze, which comes on here. You know, it used to be just in peak times. Now it's happening over a much wider range of the year when we've got international tourists, domestic tourists, and all of the events which are occurring.
Thank you.
witnesses so far that using your property for Airbnb or rental residential listed accommodation, if you use that term, is much more lucrative than using it for long-term rental. You mentioned the example of, you know, building new units in places like Three Parks and places like that. Now, if I were to buy a unit in one of those places, why would I use it for long-term rental when it's far more profitable to use it for Airbnb?
Well,
why would you go into rental? Nobody in their right mind would do that.
I don't know. Maybe the council pay for it and manage it and work it, or maybe you give an incentive. If council can't do that, and I don't understand the logistics of whether that's possible, but otherwise you give incentives to private owners to buy one of those units and create that incentive to go for long-term rental. But I think QLDC are attacking a whole corner of the population in this district, which is trying to solve a problem which it's not going to solve. These friends of mine, I tell you, we were at dinner two nights ago, they will come off the list, they will not do short-term rental. And it's time. Apartment blocks went up. Got to do it.
Yeah, don't. Yes. Well, the question I'm asking is, if you put these apartment blocks up, and I was the owner of one of these apartment blocks, why would you use them for rental when you can just Airbnb them? The council are alleging that what is happening is that when people decide to get into the market here, not many people are interested in going for rental because Airbnb, they can't compete with Airbnb in the simplest terms. So then you're left with the problem of where people live if we need people to work in cafes or find some form of accommodation, because basically they've been pushed out of the market by Airbnb. That's the allegation that's been put to us.
Yeah, I accept that is the allegation. But is that the solution to... you know, this is private enterprise. You know, but how can you be told that no, you shouldn't be allowed to do short-term rental? Because there's got to be another way. There's got to be some other collaborative approach. There's got to be some other way of funding it. Build purpose-built facilities. I just, you're attacking the wrong corner.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you very much.
Good, thank you.
Okay. I'll get my notes to you.
Thanks, Phil.
I'll email you now, so you've got my email.
Sorry?
I'll email you now, so you've got mine.
Oh, good. Thank you.
No problem.
Now, is Miss Garvin here with her
tracks? She's actually said she's not going to be attending.
She
called me back. Yep, she's not attending now, so.
No, but I can tell you.
You don't need to.
I know her very well. She's actually a relative, and she sings much of what I've been singing today, as you will have read in her submission.